Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to the Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. And once again, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on the broadcast. Today is Monday, July 5th, 2021. I hope everyone had a great 4th of July. I know Becky and I went to see the fireworks display for the first time since the COVID crisis. We got to sit in our lawn chairs out in the park there and watch a tremendous fireworks display. But, you know, I can't help thinking about the tremendous time we had, the freedoms that we enjoy, all the freedoms that we take for granted so much of the time. And, of course, uppermost in my mind yesterday was my Iranian friends who certainly want this freedom with all of their heart. They want democracy and freedom in Iran. And right now, things are so difficult for them with the economy just in a nosedive, with a new president who's a hardliner, Ibrahim Raisi, which will take office in August. They really don't have a whole lot of hope, but I pray for them. I speak for them. And today on the broadcast, I'm going to talk about the underground church in Iran and the Christians that understand the cost of following Jesus. But before I do that this morning, I want to take some time to once again weigh in on the Biden administration and their hopelessly misguided pursuit in wanting to reestablish this nuclear deal with the Iran government. Now, you know, if you follow this broadcast, how Trump faced that crisis early on in his administration. He ran as president on the form in the platform that he would not in any way continue this deal with the Iranian government, realizing that what this deal does is appease them and gives them an opportunity to really actually make nuclear missiles, to continue to enrich their uranium, to continue their nuclear program. It was a policy of appeasement that President Trump said no to. And in 2018, he ripped the deal up and imposed more sanctions on the Iranian government. I want to take some time to talk about this morning, because this is a very serious matter, because, again, the Biden administration is considering lifting sanctions on Iran's supreme leader as part of the negotiations aimed at reviving the 2015 nuclear deal. They've been having some indirect talks in Vienna, and it's really part of a wider set of compromises that would see the United States return to the 2015 pact. And again, they keep saying Iran has to abide by the restrictions on the nuclear program. And what this reminds me of is the Biden deal, because, of course, Joe Biden was vice president then. And what did this deal do when we gave them the billions of dollars in sanction relief money? What did they do with it? You know the nursery rhyme. They spent it mostly on terrorism. And this needs to get done, according to the Iranian government, before Rouhani leaves office in August. Now, back in June of 2019, when Trump was president, there was a U.S. drone that was shot down by Iranian forces. And Trump imposed more sanctions, this time on the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. And this ban and the sanctions would ban him from traveling to the United States or having any financial transactions with any U.S. companies, okay? And, of course, the Iranian government complains how this is totally unnecessary, and it shouldn't be part of this deal. But, of course, Donald Trump did not care. They had engaged in continuing to enrich their uranium, continuing their ballistic missiles program, and now shooting down our drone. And Iran thought they could get away with it. But they are dealing with that time in June of 2019 with President then Donald J. Trump, who is not an appeaser, who is not going to allow them to dictate at the end of the day. And so Biden, of course, is a weak, weak leader. He has no skills in foreign diplomacy, no skills in anything whatsoever to do with the Middle East. His appeasement of this regime will once again create a destabilizing force in the Middle East, and it's just going to just make things more difficult. Now, the administration continues to say, quote, we are still working through all of these issues, and that includes the issue of just sanctions. And, you know, if you think back to 2015, in the nuclear deal then when Obama was president, they supposedly introduced limits on Iran's nuclear enrichment. And, of course, behind the scenes, there was a sunset clause that in a few years gave them the capability to develop nuclear weapons. Now, I have mentioned to you when Trump became president, he tore up the deal. He said Iran is given favor with this deal. There's no restrictions here. And he began at that time to oppose an array of sanctions, which ended up destabilizing Iran's economy, which the whole point was to so destabilize and so disable the economy that there could be an uprising and democracy could happen. He was trying to empower the Iranian people. Under Donald J. Trump, he was a voice for the human rights of Iranian people. Under Biden, there was no voice for human rights, and I dare say the same will be under Biden. And so as they continue to flaunt this deal, even the United Nations chief is getting involved into it. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres appealing to Joe Biden to lift, to waive all these sanctions on Iran, as was agreed in the 2015 deal. He urged the United States, this is the UN Secretary Council, to extend the waivers with regard to trade in oil with the Islamic Republic of Iran and fully renew waivers for non-proliferation nuclear projects. This is the 15-member council in the United Nations. They discussed this past Wednesday because, again, they want to bring in this deal, which will destroy all of the peace that was accomplished in the Middle East by Donald Trump. This very simple, appeasing this government, which you cannot trust, which you cannot verify with any kind of, you know, investigations, any kind of way to hold them accountable, any kind of inspections. This is the biggest facade. And this joint comprehensive plan of action will not curb the limits on the nuclear program in the end. And so these indirect meetings in Vienna are once again cause for great alarm. Now, behind all of this in the background is a lobbyist group in Washington known as NIAC. And they claim to speak for the Iranian people, but of course they don't. They're more of an appeaser for the Iranian regime or the Islamic Republic of Iran. And this is a group that is very dangerous. My Iranian friends oppose them severely because they've been here as part of a lobbyist group. They voted for Joe Biden because of this reason. They want this deal. Anything that helps this regime, they want this deal. And so we have to take a look at what's going on here and understand that any negotiations with Iran on a nuclear deal is a recipe, again, a recipe for disaster and destabilization in the Middle East. But again, what we can do here at the Crossing of the Desert Central is to speak out to inform you. I talk with my Iranian friends all the time, and they plan to do lots of protests, lots of speaking out as well. We must do everything we can to say no to the Islamic Republic of Iran, especially in this nuclear deal. I will keep us posted as developments continue, and we are definitely going to hold the Biden administration to account for any kind of resuscitation of this horrific deal. This morning, I want to also focus in on something of grave importance. As I was enjoying the 4th of July yesterday with my wife and the fireworks and seeing all of the different parades, talking about the greatness of our country. We have our imperfections and faults, but we are the greatest nation in the world when it comes to democracy and freedom. We are a republic, a constitutional republic. And as I thought about yesterday and the freedoms that we had, of course, they focus right in on my Iranian friends, especially those that are part of the house church movement or the underground church. Now, I talk about this every once in a while in the program. I plan to talk more about the Christian underground church in Iran. I've talked to you many times about my Iranian friend Mary Mohammadi and what she does to be a voice for religious freedom in Iran. She's a courageous lady. And today we're gonna focus in on a lady whose article was published in the latest edition of articles in Open Doors. I want to talk to you about her. Her name is Sahar. She has a tremendous story about surviving in the underground church. It's so risky. But as I think about my Iranian friends and I think about the cost of discipleship, I want to focus a few minutes this morning on a verse of scripture that you don't hear a whole lot about in the church today. You don't hear much preaching on this. It's because our church has been weaned into a lifestyle of luxury, of health, of wealth. We take so much our freedoms for granted here. And our church in many areas of the United States, not in everyone, but in some areas of the United States, our church is so asleep in the light. We are so comfortable in our rights and in our freedoms, in our health and our wealth. The gospel has been reduced to that kind of gospel. But that goes contrary to everything Jesus taught about in discipleship and what it means to follow him. In Luke chapter 9, verses 23 through 26, Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his soul or forfeits himself? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words, of him will the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in his glory and the glory of his Father and of the holy angels." Now, listen carefully to what Jesus says here. It goes completely contrary to the gospel that is being preached in most churches today. And I want us to look carefully at the first few words that Jesus says to his disciples. If you want to believe in me, if you want to come after me, you must deny yourself and take up your cross daily and follow me. Well, wait a minute. That gospel is different than what we hear preached in the churches today. This is a gospel call for self-denial. It simply means that God, your will is prominent. It's first in my life, not my will, but your will be done in my life. But it's saying deny yourself. That means you're not on the throne. Jesus is. God is. It certainly is not a call for self-fulfillment, which is the psychologizing of the church today. This is the gospel that's in opposition to the contemporary evangelical gospel today, which amounts to self-fulfillment and self-help, where Jesus becomes a utilitarian genie. You rub the lamp of prayer, he jumps out and says, you can have whatever you want. And you give him your list, and he delivers. It's the gospel of health, wealth, and prosperity preached by none other than Joel Osteen. Jesus wants you well, and if you're not well, it's because you haven't claimed your healing. Jesus wants you prosperous and rich, and if you're not, it's because you haven't claimed it. Jesus wants you free from debt, and if you send the televangelist enough money, by the virtue of your faith, you'll be free from debt. So this is a different gospel, and Jesus makes it very clear. Look, you want to follow me. First thing, deny yourself and take up your cross daily. Well, what does that mean? Take up your cross daily. I think it's pretty simple if you think about it. Think about it very carefully. Take up your cross daily. What is the cross? It means the death of self, number one. You win by losing. You live by dying. It's the center of discipleship. The cross represented death. Jesus died as our sinless substitute to purchase our salvation. But he is saying, you understand, if you follow me, it could mean your death as well. Because the world hates you. They hated me. They're going to hate you. It could mean your death as well. So if you want to follow me, you must deny yourself and be willing to take up your cross daily to come after me. This is discipleship. This makes it hard to believe if you think about it. It actually is based on a great book by John MacArthur, Hard to Believe. You know, Jesus made it very clear, do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I didn't come to bring peace, but a sword. I came to set a man against his father, a daughter against his mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Wow. Well, Jesus is saying, your family situation is going to get worse because of me, because of who I am. Because of the cost of discipleship, there's going to be an impossible gulf between you and the people of your family. First, count the cost. If you love your father or mother more than me, you're not worthy of me. If you love your son or daughter more than me, you're not worthy of me. If you're not willing to pay the price of a permanent rift in your family, unless those people come to Christ, if you're not willing to pay the price of a greater trauma in your family, a greater conflict, greater suffering, then you're not even worthy to be my disciple. These are hard, hard truths compared to the gospel that we're being deceived into believing today. I want to take us now to an article written about Sahar. In the underground church in Iran, it appeared in Open Doors, written by Linda Lowry. And I want to read this to you because it underscores what I just shared with you about what the gospel is, what the cost of discipleship is, what it means to follow Jesus, what it means to follow after him under hostile circumstances. Sahar knows all about this. So I want to read this to you. I want you to listen to what goes on with the Christians in the underground church. Sahar found her seat on the plane. Her headscarf was draped loosely around her head. She tried and failed to stop her hands from fidgeting in her lap. If she knew at that moment her name was being called in the loudspeaker in the airport, she would have been even more nervous. Sahar tried to force herself to lift her head to look out the small window and take one last look at Iran, her home. But fear paralyzed her. If the Secret Service caught her, she might end up in prison, perhaps even one of the worst prisons. The plane sat at the gate, the flight attendants making their rounds, and there was nothing Sahar could do but wait. Soon she would be free, or soon she would be behind bars. Let's hear a little bit about Sahar. What's this all about? She grew up in a Muslim family. Her first encounter with Jesus was through a vivid dream. "Follow me," Jesus said. And it was that simple but powerful call that changed her life forever. In Iran, leaving Islam for Christianity, that's a dangerous choice. Did she know what she was getting herself into when she said yes to Jesus? Well, probably not at that time. But as her love for Christ grew, so did her courage. Sahar began to regularly gather with other Christians, worshiping, praying. It was always risky, but the fellowship was the basis of their growth in faith. They shared their lives together, and they became family. Eventually, Sahar even decided to take the most dangerous job in the church, the pastor. Let me just say, in the underground church in Iran, you know who the leaders are? Women. You want to know why? Because of the oppression of women that is so severe that when these women come to Christ, they are given a privilege of being a leader in the church. Boy, we can learn from that. We have such restrictions on women here. But in Iran, that's not a no-brainer. God uses women in a marvelous way. Now, and then the unavoidable happened. Iran's Secret Service raided the church. The officers entered the apartment where the house church members were meeting. They forced open the door with a crowbar, but didn't raise their voices to avoid the attention of the neighbors. They were silent in their aggression and focused on their objective. Before any of the church members realized what was happening, women were pushed into one room, men into another. The church members looked at their leader, their eyes full of fear. Their faces asked, "What will happen to us?" Well, but every Christian in Iran knows what might happen if they're caught worshiping outside the small number of carefully monitored registered churches. There are registered churches in Iran. There are above-ground churches. These are with people that are already Christians. Now, the state allows them, the government allows them, if you will, this minute bit of freedom. But they monitor them, and they make sure that they're not engaging Muslims, so that's a serious offense. So every Christian, like I mentioned, knows what happens if they're caught worshiping outside of these registered churches. House churches are regularly raided by police, and dozens of Christians end up in prison each year. During interrogation, the security officers lie to believers, enticing them to give up the names of other worshipers or church leaders and work to destroy the church from within. So they're promising them all this freedom if they'll just cooperate, but they're lying to them, of course. Well, the raid in Sahar's church was no different. More and more Iranian Christians hold meetings to prepare for this inevitability. They hold meetings to prepare to being arrested. to share and learn about the practical and emotional ways to endure a raid with as little damage as possible. So isn't that interesting? The church members get together. They hold meetings. How are we going to deal with it if we're raided? Well, that's a good idea to prepare. But notice they have to be prepared to be arrested in Iran. Just a few months before the raid on her church, Zahar attended such a meeting. In the blink of an eye, theory became reality. Zahar entered the living room where she was called for interrogation. Of course, this room is full of burly men. One of them was filming everything. Zahar was terrified, but she tried to calm herself down. This was happening, and she couldn't change it. She had a church to take care of. Still shivering with fear, lessons from the persecution preparation meeting, well, they came back to her. She had to let someone outside the apartment know what was happening for prayer and for advocacy. Can I go to the restroom? She asked the friendliest officer. In the restroom, Zahar grabbed her phone, snapped a selfie, and sent it to the outside world. Please pray for us. Our church is being raided. Wow, can you imagine that? Here you and I are sitting in our comfortable living room, and we get a text on Facebook with a terrified Christian girl who is the leader of a house church. We're being raided. Pray for us. She learned that at a meeting. Now, they hadn't confiscated her cell phone yet, so she was very fortunate. She started deleting evidence and contacts from her phone. That she learned. One of the female officers began to push on the bathroom door, trying to force it open. Zahar had learned that police have no legal right to enter. So she firmly told the officer about her rights, making the officer back out reluctantly. She learned this at the meeting. Her knowledge continues to pay off. When the officers told Zahar she was going to be arrested, she asked for the warrant and stopped the Secret Service officers from taking her to prison immediately. When they told her they had intercepted her passport, which was in the mail for administrative reasons, she didn't believe it. Sure enough, the next day she went to the post office and found her passport there. She also knew she would need to flee. If she was actually taken to jail, she knew she would face unthinkable prison conditions, torture, misery, sickness. You know, the COVID crisis is still on in Iran, and the prisons are still infected. And so, with legs shaking in fear, Zahar arrived at the airport just 3 days later. She's on her way out of Iran, and she remembered one of her favorite Bible verses, Isaiah chapter 43, verse 2. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. What a beautiful promise. So Zahar knew it would be a miracle if she could get out of Iran. The warrant for her arrest was ready. Her heart skipped a beat. When she saw no one was in line, she was in. One of the secret agents who had raided her house a day ago. Well, that was Rao. Wow, one of the secret agents are there. That was the toughest moment in her life. And there she was all alone, no family, no fellow Christians to help her. She's at the airport. In that moment, she realized only God could help her. Her only companions were the Bible verses she had memorized before her Bible was taken in the raid. Here's the words of Isaiah 43:2 ringing in her head, when you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. And so, with that in mind, picture this girl enduring so much fear and trauma. She claimed the promise of that verse and stepped, and while she could feel this agent's eyes staring at her, a miracle happened. Zahar was allowed to board this plane. Only later did she find out that the moment she boarded the plane, the moment the security service in the airport had called her name over the loudspeaker right after she boarded the plane. They had just received the warrant for her arrest. But thank the Lord in his perfect timing. They were too late. Zahar's plane had taken off safely. Now, 4 years later, listen to Zahar. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if it wasn't for my preparation. Remember, they had a class to prepare for this. They went through the steps of what to do. I read that to you. It's 4 years after her escape from Iran, and Open Doors met her in the country she now lives in, a place where she can worship freely. And it's not mentioned where she's at for her safety. At the gathering with the other believers, Zahar says, I learned how to manage my emotion and what my rights are, that the officers sometimes lie to spread disunity. It wouldn't be safe to disclose much about Zahar's former Horse Church, but the church went through these trials together. They didn't believe the lies the officers told them, that they had no right to meet each other anymore, or that Zahar had betrayed them. So remember, she learned the tactics. They learned the tactics in these meetings, and they refused to believe their lies. One of their lies was that Zahar betrayed them. That's why you're having this raid. It was a lie. The first thing the security services want is to de-unify us, Zahar explains. But staying together really helped us in these times. Fellowship is essential for growth. Zahar goes on to emphasize that a miraculous escape story doesn't mean the event doesn't leave its marks. The first year in her new country, she had the same nightmare about the raid every night. And that is just one of the many scars Zahar still bears. After 4 years of healing, Zahar is doing relatively well again, but at times, flashbacks still haunt her. She knows it would have been much worse had she had been arrested, had the warrant been served to her before she got on the plane, and if she had went to prison. So how can we help? Linda Lowry asks Zahar. That is the author of this article. Pray, says Zahar, reminding us prayer was important enough for her to send out a call for it in the middle of the raid. No Christian should face persecution unprepared, and no Christian should go through it without prayer for the worldwide church. That is an incredible story. And again, I go back to the scriptures I shared with you. She knew what it meant to follow Jesus in Iran. They knew of salvation. Jesus purchased our salvation, but the cost, the reality of following Jesus. And the first thing we learned is that we must take up our cross, deny ourselves and take up our cross daily. Well, they know that. They understand the words of Jesus far better than any of us. Well, I want us to take a break now just for a couple of minutes and listen to this song of worship, the acoustic version of Jesus by Chris Tomlin. Let's listen.
There is a truth older than the ages. There is a promise of things yet to come. There is one born for our salvation. Jesus.
song of worship, the acoustic version of Jesus by Chris Tomlin. What is it about Jesus that causes these young Iranian Christians to meet, to risk their lives, to worship, to preach, to tell others about him? What is it, Jesus? Well, I think it's pretty simple. They see the fruit of Islam. They see the teachings of Muhammad. They see the government that oppresses their freedoms daily, that kills them, that puts them in prison simply because they don't have the right to believe anything but what the government tells them to believe. They see the oppression. They see the death. And then they hear about Jesus, that he loves, that he has compassion, that he gives forgiveness, that it's about a relationship instead of a religion. They see the differences, especially the Iranian women. They see that Jesus treated women with great respect and compassion. And then they hear about Islam and how Muhammad continues to come up in their minds as a symbol of oppression, not freedom. Look at the way Muhammad treated women in comparison to Jesus. So I think you can see the differences. They get online. They have their VPN, the unfiltered Facebook. They search. They look. They meet with other Christians. I meet with them. In my book with Manoush Bakhtiari, my co-author, in the book, Dear God, Please Bring Freedom to Iran, I wrote the story of a precious girl in a house church situation just like Sahar, who fled Iran just like Sahar miraculously, and she is in Glasgow, Scotland, in these days. Her name is Mania Masoudi. I wrote her story called Safe in the Arms of God. I was reading this story during the song and remembering Sahar's story, and I thought how similar this was. And Mania sought out this house church simply because of her exposure to Islam, how men and women were not equal but segregated in Iran, how the husband treated his wife as a possession, and she had no other alternative to obey. This is what Mania told me when I wrote her story, that he had the freedom to marry four wives. So she saw the fruit of Islam, and she wanted nothing to do with religion ever again in Iran until one day someone who taught her piano introduced himself as a Christian in the Armenian church. And what happened was they got together, became good friends, and they met in the secret house church underground movement. His name was Muram Bad. And that house church was raided one day. Mania escaped miraculously. She ran out the back door before they were all caroused up and took in the van. And her parents helped her leave Iran. They helped her leave through a friend that got her on the plane. And she made her way to the UK, where she lives today as a citizen. I wrote her story. But like so often with many Iranians that I meet, they suddenly disappear off of Facebook for whatever reason. And I haven't been able to contact Mania for a while. But when I was reading Sahar's story today to you, it reminded me so much of Mania, a beautiful Christian lady who is so grateful to God for her new life. She now has hope. She was attracted to Christianity by love. The God of Christianity filled Mania with love instead of fear and gave her hope and forgiveness instead of depression and despair. Mania describes her present situation as, quote, safe in the arms of God. I can read on and on about the experience of Iranian Christians, but I hope that you, as the listener, if you don't know Jesus, I hope that you will cry out and ask him to reveal himself to you, that you would begin to do your research and your study and your investigation. Your experience in Iran with the false religion of Islam is not the God of Christianity. The God of Christianity is Jesus. And sometimes my Iranian friends completely give up on God altogether, like Mania, and even like Sahar, until they are introduced to the God of irresistible love, to Christ, to his hope, his compassion, his forgiveness that he gives them. And then my Iranian friends see the difference between Christianity and Islam. It's really down to this, the difference between love and fear. God bless you. I thank you so much for meeting with me today on the Cross in the Desert. I'm here again on Thursday, and I'm going to continue my Bible study on what it means to follow Jesus. We just started today, and I'm going to continue that on Thursday. Have a great week, and I will see you again on Thursday on the Cross in the Desert.